It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
President-elect has now settled on retired four-star Marine General John Kelly as his pick to lead Homeland Security. His last government job was the United States Southern Command, which oversees 32 countries in the Caribbean as well as Central and South America. Kelly's portfolio included Guantanamo Bay, immigration, and drug trafficking. Those close to Kelly say that experience makes him well-versed on southern border issues. And when he retired in January, he seemed to check another Trump box, emphasizing his work with intelligence and Homeland Security outside the Beltway.
At least it's been my experience, the further you get away from Washington, the better things work. People actually talk to each other. People actually socialize with each other. They work together. There's no rice bowls.
General Kelly is widely respected, having led forces in western Iraq, and he understands the human cost of war. In 2010, his son, Lieutenant Robert M. Kelly, was killed in Afghanistan by an IED. Kelly rarely speaks about the loss, but when he does, he addresses the importance of finishing the mission for fellow Gold Star families.
I think the one thing they would ask is that the cause for which their son or daughter fell be carried through to a successful end, whatever that means, as opposed to this is getting too costly or too much of a pain, and let's just walk away from it. Because that's when they start thinking it might have been not worth it.
The new secretary will take over the sprawling department of 240,000 government employees at a time a senior Republican and the administration's counterterrorism chief warned the threat has never been broader, wider, or deeper.
There exists a greater number of potential terrorist actors who aspire to do us harm than at any point in our history since 9/11.
For 8 years, the Obama administration reluctantly played global whack-a-mole with jihadists rather than leaning into the fight with decisive leadership. They said terrorists were on the run when they were really on the rise.
All right, that, ladies and gentlemen, is amazingly good news. General John Kelly, nominated for Homeland Security. I've spent not a small amount of time worrying about Mike McCall, a congressman from Texas, being charged with Homeland Security when he has a checkered history on his understanding and relationships with the Muslim Brotherhood. So John Kelly is an amazing choice. Let me give you an example here. This is an article by Adam Credo just yesterday. President-elect Donald Trump's pick to head the Department of Homeland Security has been warning for some time about Iranian influence among America's southern border and in South America, in another sign that the incoming administration is seeking to attack the Islamic Republic's terrorist footprint from its first days in office. Let me just cut to the chase here. General Kelly has been telling us, he's been the commander of the U.S. Southern Command, that the Iranians are infiltrating and trying to influence South America. He testified that Iranian legislators visited Cuba, Ecuador, Nicaragua. They're advocating for increased economic and diplomatic cooperations. They're trying to circumvent U.S. influence in South America. They're building cultural centers, building support among Islamists and would-be radicals in those countries. He says Iran has established more than 80 cultural centers in a region with an extremely small Muslim population. The purported purpose of these centers is to improve Iran's image, promote Shia Islam, and increase Iran's political influence in the region. As the foremost state sponsor of terrorism, Iran's involvement in the region and these cultural centers is a matter for concern, and its diplomatic, economic, and political engagement is closely monitored. I read all of that to you just to explain to you that General John Kelly understands the threat from Islam, and he's certainly been tracking it in South America and the southern border. He is the perfect pick for Homeland Security because he understands the threat. He's not denying it like so many of the rest of them, don't want to talk about it. Oh, no, that's not really true. We've had reports, and I've reported it to you from trusted sources, that we've got people coming over the border bringing Korans that are left and found, and that we've got trouble on the southern border, imminent danger on the southern border, but no one wants to talk about it. But General John Kelly will talk about it, and if he's confirmed, he will be the Department of Homeland Security Secretary. By the way, just as an aside note, Federation for American Immigration Reform, which is an organization I work with every spring, and they have a radio row, hold their feet to the fire. Remember, we've been doing it for years. They are in strong support of General Kelly. And another name that's coming up for Homeland Security is Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach. Now, he hasn't been officially nominated, but I'm just telling you, his name is being floated from some informed sources. Kris Kobach has been a champion on the illegal immigration case. He will be very controversial, as will John Kelly. Kris Kobach, I hope he's nominated. I just think it'll be fabulous. And by the way, one thing I didn't mention yesterday, you know, Governor Pat McCrory had to concede his election in North Carolina. He is the governor that held fast on HB2, which was the legislation passed by North Carolina, signed by him, that would protect women and girls from men wanting to access bathrooms and dressing rooms in North Carolina. And as a result of that, you know, he was targeted big time, and he lost his election by not that many votes. And he finally conceded, I think, yesterday morning, maybe the day before. So guess what? Guess who was seen at Trump Tower yesterday? Governor Pat McCrory. And so I have to tell you, I'm rooting for him to get some position in the Trump cabinet. Not necessarily a position in the cabinet, but in the administration, because these are the kind of men who've paid a great price, and they deserve a place. And they're the guys that will do something because they've already paid a price. They've shown that they are willing to do whatever it takes, just like Michael Flynn, who's going to be the chief advisor to the president on defense issues if he gets confirmed. Michael Flynn paid a huge price for not fully cooperating with the Obama administration on issues that he felt were completely out of line. And so these are the kinds of men that it looks like Donald Trump is surrounding himself with. And by the way, there's a huge migrant surge at the border. I've told you that before, but it's continuing. In fact, they're saying it's around 2,000 a day. It's unbelievable. Casey Stegall at Fox last night did a report on it. The part I want to center on is the part about building the wall and about what companies may be called on to do in order to stop this influx. Let's listen.
Long before President-elect Donald Trump's promise of a wall along the southern border, barriers actually started going up a decade ago after President George W. Bush signed the Secure Fence Act of 2006. Of the nearly 2,000-mile-long U.S.-Mexico border, about 670 miles is now walled or fenced. Congress never approved additional funding for more, and the program essentially went away. That was then. This is now. President-elect Trump ran much of his campaign vowing to not only build along the entire border, but also make Mexico pay for it. However, some like Eloisa Tamez, who voted for Trump, don't have great confidence in how effective that'll be.
More walls will not solve the problem.
Aside from keeping people out, there's also the issue of what to do with those already living or staying here illegally. That was partially addressed when the president-elect on YouTube recently presented a plan for his first 100 days in office.
I will direct the Department of Labor to investigate all abuses of visa programs that undercut the American worker.
Something that's both celebrated and feared for industries that rely heavily on immigrant labor, like agriculture and construction.
It's extremely difficult to get any kind of visa.
Stan Merrick owns one of the largest construction companies in Texas. He's more than ready for reform. Merrick says right now, it's American businesses being punished for following the law, losing work to a growing number of outfits that skirt the rules by paying employees in cash and not coughing up taxes.
Companies like mine cannot invest in a labor force unless we level the playing field.
And Merrick's motto is the best border security is at a job site, meaning he believes President-elect Trump could be on the right track with holding employers accountable.
Well, you know, that Sandy Rios, back with you, that was Casey Stiegel from Fox yesterday, a portion of his report. That has been tried, and the Obama administration and the Republicans in Congress have not enforced this. I don't mean all the Republicans, the leadership. And that is this, I can't even think of the name of the program now, but it's where they verify citizenship. And it's a very good program, but they just stopped enforcing it. And certainly it's true that if American employees can no longer hire illegal immigrants, or they themselves will be in trouble, that will clean up a lot of this. A lot of people will go back home because they can't find jobs. And if American institutions will stop handing out benefits that don't belong to non-citizens, this will dry a lot of it up. Tons of this will go away without benefit of a wall. I say do both. And so we'll see. I think Donald Trump may do both. We'll find out. Now, another stunning thing that happened yesterday. This was amazing. As if John Kelly wasn't enough, we have another nomination. Let's listen.
Oklahoma's top prosecutor, Scott Pruitt, will be named as the new director of the EPA, according to Reuters.
This is not just about the oil and gas business. This is about every person that's trying to conduct business in the U.S.
For years, Pruitt and Oklahoma sued the agency, arguing it overreached when it came to regulating factory and power plant emissions. Oklahoma Independent Petroleum Association Chairman Jeffrey McDougall sees Pruitt cutting back regulations to generate Oklahoma and the country's economy.
And over the 8 years that Obama has been in, we've had over 600. Now, any industry that has to deal with that onslaught is just difficult to get past it.
But some environmental groups, like the World Resources Institute, says the pick raises deeply troubling questions, saying Pruitt has been an outspoken critic of rules that protect water and air and has led efforts to prevent EPA from reducing greenhouse gas emissions and other pollutants.
All right, so that's a brief report, but that was a quick one. Oh, that's an understatement. Scott Pruitt is hated by the left, the environmental left, because he really has been on the cutting edge of fighting these unbelievably irrational EPA regulations. He's not only just spoken about it, he's led the fight against it. He is an outspoken person who does not believe in man-made climate change. He doesn't believe in that. And that is just anathema. That's like the holy grail to the environmental left. They hate Scott Pruitt. And President-elect Donald Trump has just appointed him to be, I'm sorry, this is just funny to me. It's funny because the left has had their way for so long. They have done irrational, unbelievable things that are untethered from reality. And the reason they've done it is to punish. I think some of them, I remember very well Wes Smith. I have to have Wes on sometime. He is a writer on environmental issues. And I spent a great amount of time with him in the past interviewing him when I was in Chicago. But Wes was the first person to tell me about what a religion the environmental movement had become to the people involved in it. It was a replacement for God. It's like, the sacrament is, recycling and all of the things that make people feel like it's like a sacrament to make them feel good about their involvement in this religion. For others, it is a bald-faced way to destroy capitalism, to redistribute wealth, to reduce the ability to use fossil fuels and to continue to advance and to live the way that we live because, it's wrong. Somehow it's wrong. I mean, it is untethered from reality, and it has been the mantra and the issue of control for our government under Obama, and even in some ways before that, George W. Bush was going squishy on this. So this is really amazing. Scott Pruitt, Attorney General from Oklahoma, nominated to be the head of the EPA. All right, well, coming up next, you're in for a treat because we have an expert on China, interesting man, Gordon Chang. And we're going to talk about China and Taiwan and their response to the nomination or the election of Donald Trump to president. So don't go away. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Yeah.
We've always had an interest. God has given us a gift of being able to help a lot of people with their finances and budgets and stuff.
AFA supporters Bernie and Alice Larson met Dan Celia at a Faith, Family, and Finance town hall meeting.
And he answered some questions, and we were thinking about the charitable gift annuities, and we'd never heard of that before, but we thought, well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God, but we didn't know where or how. And we felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
Bernie and Alice learned a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation would provide them with a monthly income for life, as well as supporting the American Family Association into the future. You can learn more about charitable gift annuities and other financial products at afafoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
And you just can't outgive God.
How can you help keep your child safe at school?
Welcome to Tips with public school educator Dr. Bill Ziegler.
As parents and as educators, we have a responsibility to act anytime that we believe our children may be in danger. If your child comes home and tells you that someone said something in the school about hurting the school or someone in the school, you need to act quickly and promptly. First thing, call the school principal. Talk to the school. Secondly, you may want to contact the local police authorities just to keep them updated and in the loop. Thirdly, don't hesitate. Don't think, oh, this will go away, because guess what? It may not. Your child's safety and the safety of every child in your school may depend on you sharing the knowledge that you have. So if your child tells you that they know about a threat to the school, stand up, talk. It's everyone's responsibility to keep our schools safe.
Visit the TIPS website at 4tips.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Truett McConnell University is training students to love the Lord, love the Word, love the Church, and love the lost. Scripture is the foundation for everything they do. It's who they are, preparing students not just for a career, but to fulfill God's high calling on their lives. Truett McConnell University offers a wide array of bachelor's programs, some online, and they also have an outstanding Master of Arts in Theology. So if you'd like to schedule a visit to Truett's campus in the North Georgia Mountains, visit truett.edu. It's not exactly clear why BuzzFeed chose to publicly shame Chip and Joanna Gaines, the host of the HGTV show Fixer Upper. Nor do we know why the online publication attacked the Christian couple's church. Maybe the writer got a speeding ticket while driving through Waco, or maybe she just has a distaste for shiplap. Or maybe, just maybe, BuzzFeed employs writers who are anti-Christian bigots. Regardless, the smear cannot be undone, accusing the Antioch Community Church of being anti-gay and, by extension, the Gaines family.
We are not only not anti-gay, we are just pro helping people in their journey to find out who God is and who he's made them to be.
That's Jimmy Siebert, the pastor of Antioch Community Church, says they plan on standing alongside the Gaines family and urge others to do the same thing. Folks, it's time for us to put a stop to BuzzFeed's public shaming of Christians. I'm Todd Starnes.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the morning.
First time, China sent two bombers capable of launching nuclear weapons to circle Taiwan, Fox News has learned. The November 26 foray was a test for U.S. allies in the Pacific. Japan scrambled 8 fighter jets to intercept China's H-6 bombers. President-elect Donald Trump's controversial call with the president of Taiwan incensed Chinese leaders. General Jim Jones, President Obama's first national security advisor, offered his perspective.
That didn't bother me. I think the purists are flapping their wings and saying all kinds of things. Why they can't have a five-minute conversation or whatever it was to say congratulations is doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But so it didn't bother me.
A view echoed by one of Trump's possible picks for Secretary of State.
Nobody in Beijing gets to dictate who we talk to.
Since the Chinese Civil War in the 1940s, China and Taiwan have been separately ruled. China claims sovereignty over the island. Trump is the first president or president-elect to speak with a Taiwanese leader since the U.S. broke off relations in 1979 under President Jimmy Carter, when his administration established formal relations with Beijing, marking the start of the One China policy. Trump's chief of staff pushed back on suggestions the president-elect made a mistake.
He knew exactly what was happening, but look, we've got a lot of problems to solve in this country, and we're not going to solve them by just, you know, making believe that people don't exist.
Trump's response to his critics came in a tweet. Interesting how the U.S. sells Taiwan billions of dollars of military equipment, but I should not accept a congratulatory call. U.S. arms sales to Taiwan have totaled more than $46 billion since 1990. In December 2015, the United States announced a $1.83 billion arms sales agreement to Taiwan, the first in 4 years. The White House was on the defensive today. It's already spoken twice to the Chinese.
Senior officials of the National Security Council have been in touch with their Chinese counterparts to reiterate our country's continued commitment to a one China policy.
All right, that was Jennifer Griffin. That was actually not Jennifer Griffin. That was Josh Earnest. But Jennifer Griffin's report on Fox News a couple of days ago, you know, of course, because it became a big news story that President-elect Donald Trump took a call from the president of Taiwan and all hell broke loose in China. I'm going to read with for you some of the comments by some of the reportedly related communist news outlets. In fact, I'll stop just to do that for a second. One headline is that rookie Trump must fall into line. They say that it's they suggest that this is the Communist Party's mouthpiece. It's the People's Daily. And they say that Trump has an inability to keep his mouth shut. They talk about how he is going to have to rethink his positions on China. He can make a lot of noise, but that does not exempt him from the rules of the major power game. That's one sentence that they wrote. See, the relationship between the United States and China is so complex. And as with all the other, so many, most of the issues we discuss, the American public doesn't really know and understand. I don't think the top leaders really know and fully understand. But there's a lot you can know about our relationship with China. And so I've asked a China expert to join us this morning. His name is Gordon Chang. He's an attorney and an author of a recent book called The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Gordon was born in China, but his mother was Scottish. And so he is currently, he's briefed the National Intelligence Council, the CIA, the State Department. He writes all the time, the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and he is a trustee, former trustee of Cornell University. And he joins us this morning. Gordon, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Sandy.
Hey, I just a couple of things about your bio here that are so interesting to me. You were born in China, but you didn't spend a lot of time there. When did you come to the States?
Well, actually, I was born in Long Branch, New Jersey. My dad was born in China, near Shanghai, across the Yangtze River. He came in 1945, just a few months before Japan surrendered, and he stayed in the U.S., and I was born in New Jersey.
Okay, well, you know, leave it to Wikipedia to get it wrong. So, you know, that's a great source of information. So you were born here, but your mom's Scottish, right?
She was American of Scottish descent. Her family had been in the country for a very long time, and they met at Riverside Church in New York City. And my dad had lived in Madison, New Jersey, which is not far from New York City, and he was considered to be the person who sparked the revival of the commercial area in Madison. And he lived there until the end of his life. And he lived actually in Madison more than any other place that he had been.
Wow. All right. So because of the timeline of him coming to the United States, I'm guessing this had to be there was a tremendous amount of turmoil in China. Kind of describe what was going on during at the end of World War II in China that brought him here.
Well, China was in civil war. Chiang Kai-shek of the Republic of China was fighting Mao Zedong. Chiang essentially lost. He fled to Taiwan, and there he established, again, the Republic of China. Mao, in October 1st, 1949, declared the establishment of the People's Republic of China. And Beijing claims Taiwan as its 34th province, but in reality, the Chinese Civil War has not been concluded because you have these two rival climates, claimants to be the sovereign ruler of China. Now, the people in Taiwan don't take that very seriously. If China did not actually coerce them, they would probably declare themselves to be the Republic of Taiwan.
You know, one of the most interesting biographies I ever read was the biography of Mao Zedong and just the brutality and the way he studied with the European communists before he went back to China and took power using, you know, crisis, natural disasters, union disgruntlement, you know, gradually working to do exactly what the Western communists had taught him to do. I'm just curious, Gordon, I know these are personal questions, but just interesting to me. Where did your dad spend a lot of time? You know, Cuban immigrants know a lot about their history, and they hate Castro. They hate what he did to their island. Their fathers have told them, and they've made some of the best Americans. I'm just curious to know, did your dad talk to you a lot about what the communist system was? Was that a discussion in your home?
All the time. And it was just like the Cuban migrants to Florida, because the Chinese community in the United States at that time was very much against Mao. What you have, though, is you have Chinese Americans now doing business, and they have become supporters of Beijing, which really is shameful. So the Chinese-American community has changed. But when it came to the United States, it was very much against communism and again, and for freedom and democracy, because they were the beneficiaries of it. My father got a scholarship from Chiang Kai-shek to come study at Cornell. And so therefore, you know, to him, freedom was precious because it was life itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess this happens to every generation. It just does. It's happened to the next generation of Cubans, too, where they just lose that. And it's happening to Americans, too, who's are getting further from World War II and understanding what it means to fight for freedom. But that's why we're talking, Gordon, and that's why you write the way you do. So let's talk about Taiwan again. We initially, when Chiang Kai-shek went to Taiwan and established the Republic of China, they were strong allies of the United States, were they not?
Oh, they certainly were. And by the way, I want to say that the person who believes in American values the most is my wife, who was born in Hong Kong, who became an American citizen about 10 years ago. And just one typical example. Every time that she hears the national anthem, usually before a football game, she's the one to stand up and put her hand over her heart. It is the most inspiring thing to see. And to me, this shows that the people who flee from those types of regimes are the ones who are the most fervent supporters of democracy. And we've got to remember that. We Americans sometimes don't remember all this stuff. And we should recall that one phrase from Ronald Reagan, that freedom is only one generation away from extinction.
And the point to be made here, Gordon, of course, is that that's why immigration has made America stronger. The right kind of immigration, because anyone coming here can become America, because America is a series of wonderful ideas centered around our Constitution, around honoring God. Anyone from anywhere, of any skin color and race, can become an American. We have bastardized the meaning of immigration, and that's why, as it currently stands, where we have no borders and no control, it's not a strong thing. It's tearing us apart. But that's a discussion for another day, Gordon. Let's talk about Jimmy Carter in 1979. Now, we were strong allies with Taiwan. Taiwan, a free market society, Mao Zedong, a brutal dictator, killing his own people, too, and shutting China off for, I don't know, how many years? How many years was China absolutely shut off from the world?
Well, Mao Zedong moved to shut off China as soon as he grabbed power. So that's the end of 1949. And in those times, in the 1950s, it was called the Bamboo Curtain. It was not until actually Nixon went to Beijing in 1972 that Chinese leaders actually started to think about opening their country. But they didn't do it during Mao's lifetime. They did it under the rule of Deng Xiaoping, Mao's successor. In the early 1980s, you have China tentatively opening itself up in progressive stages. And by the way, right now, Sandy, China is closing itself off from the rest of the world again under Xi Jinping as it tries to shut foreign companies out of its markets, and its economy is delinking from the world with its imports and exports falling.
Wow.
So this is an important story about the reversal of the positive trends that we had seen in China. But it's a natural consequence, I think, of China's system dominated by the Communist Party. And so, therefore, this is what we're seeing is a natural progression as China is not able to maintain this opening to the world.
You know, that's interesting, Gordon. I did not know that. And certainly, we all wondered how in the world they would maintain that tension between sort of dabbling in capitalism but maintaining their strong communist rule. I mean, how would that work? And so it's not working. It's not working. Boy, that's got to be shocking for the Chinese people after experiencing some freedom.
Well, you know, it certainly is. You know, you're starting to see, Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, he talks about Mao in glowing terms, and this certainly is regressive. He's making the political system much more coercive. And last year, China's trade, imports and exports, fell 8.0%. This year, they'll be down somewhere between 6 and 7%. And this is an economy that is delinking from the rest of from the global system. That's an extremely bad story.
That's amazing. Oh, boy, that brings a lot of questions to me. Gordon, let me ask you hoping that you can stay with me a little bit longer after the commercial break. Am I assuming something here?
I'll be able to sustain another segment.
Okay, good. Because let's go to the economic in a few minutes. But right now, let's finish up on Taiwan and our relationship with them, because Jimmy Carter then established this one China policy, fancy name for shutting out Taiwan and only working with mainland China. What did you think about that, and how in the world did that happen, and why?
Well, it happened because the United States during the Cold War wanted to entice Beijing away from Moscow. But after the Cold War was over, this was a policy which was unnecessary, and we ended up supporting some pretty unsavory leaders. The United States right now wants to integrate China into the international system, and because of that, people don't want to upset Beijing. And other people think that the Chinese own the 21st century, so they are intimidated by them. Well, the Chinese don't, by the way. So essentially what we have now is a policy. It's called the One China policy. The media mostly mangles it. What we say is that there is only one China, and we acknowledge Beijing's position that Taiwan is part of that one China. By acknowledging it, we're not using it in the words that we accept it. We just recognize that that is Beijing's position. The State Department, and this is official U.S.-American policy, says that Taiwan's status is undetermined. And furthermore, we maintain, and this is the most important part, that the resolution of the status between Taiwan and China must be peaceful. In other words, the Taiwan people must accept it. People in Taiwan don't think they're part of the People's Republic of China. Most of the people on the island self-identify as Taiwanese only, not Chinese. Normally about 60 to 70% identify that way. Only 3 or 4%, sometimes 5 or 6 in these surveys, self-identify as Chinese only. So if people in Taiwan had their way, they certainly would declare themselves to be the Republic of Taiwan. And I think the United States, because we were born of a movement of freedom, should also recognize that if that's what Taiwan wants, that's what Taiwan should get, and we should say publicly and in private to the Chinese that we will defend Taiwan against Chinese aggression.
My guest is Gordon Chang, and is the author of The Coming Collapse of China. And when we return, there was a new sheriff in town who actually took a call from the president of Taiwan, and you thought the world had ended. And we'll talk about that, plus what is going on economically. And the ties between the United States and China are so very deep. What does this all mean? This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
We are going to the Holy Land in March. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I only lead one tour a year to Israel. It's not my day job. It's just an annual tour that I do as I learn from my dad how to take folks to Israel. And we're going to have a wonderful experience. Most of the folks going are listeners to American Family Radio or supporters of American Family Association. And we're going to have a great time March 9th through the 17th. If you want information on this tour of the Holy Land, you can do it two ways. You can call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5. 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5, that's families with an S, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll put a brochure in the mail to you. And if you want to go online, you can visit us at twholyland.com, twholyland.com. Again, won't be long till we close out this tour, so if you want more information, let us know.
Hi, this is Tom Wallace of Fortress of Faith. I want to invite you to catch our show each Saturday at 12 noon Central Time. I was a foreign missionary, and my partner, Sharam, was a former Muslim who is now a Christian pastor. Together, we have many years of experience and research in the religion of Islam. Fortress of Faith exposes the evil of this ideology that is masquerading as a religion. For more information, go to fortressoffaith.com. That's fortressoffaith.com.
You experienced a call to ministry later in life, and now you're in a second career. You like to call it your calling. You know you need more preparation, but how? Where? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, where an online Master of Divinity degree can be tailor-made for you. Small class size, individual attention, learning opportunities that fit your busy schedule. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where we equip the called. WBS.edu.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Post-election meetings of Congress known as lame duck sessions epitomize the old adage, you want it bad, you get it bad. In such sessions, legislators who will not serve in the next Congress get to vote, potentially endearing themselves to lobbyists and other future employers. The leadership often tries to jam through legislation that would not pass if subjected to closer scrutiny and debate. Representative Louis Gohmert yesterday warned about such a measure scheduled for a vote this morning, known as the tracking bill. It would create a federal program for monitoring the whereabouts of certain people, including by implanting location-transmitting chips and having law enforcement collect the data. What might help with autistic and demented individuals obviously has the potential for immense abuse. Please, let your representative know right away. Such a program must not get blown through this lame duck session. This is Frank Affney.
Merry Christmas from American Family Radio and Sandy Rios in the Morning. Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio. Everybody.
Every valley.
exalted, 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 exalted. Shall be exalted.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. It is Christmas time. It's hard to believe. And of course, that song is from the Soulful Messiah, which I love, Soulful Celebration. It's interesting. That's a passage from Isaiah that says, every valley shall be exalted. What that means is that all the stuff is going to be smoothed out and all the rough places made plain. So all of the twists and turns of life and all of the twists and turns of international relations and the evil that men do, the wars and all of that, everything will be sorted out. Every valley shall be exalted and every rough place shall be made plain. It's a beautiful song. Even if you, I love the rendition. I'm not sure. Sometimes people don't like my Christmas bumpers, but I love that rendition. It just cheers me up. We're talking about China. Interestingly enough, I've had the privilege of being in China several times. And the thing that, of course, I know is that while China was shut off during the Bamboo Curtain, there were house churches that just grew exponentially. And when Richard Nixon finally opened the door to China, we found that there were millions and millions of Chinese who had become Christians, which was just amazing, which has had, I believe, a tremendous effect on the culture in China, whether it's the one-child policy, the way they do business. And so there is unrest. Gordon Chang is my guest. He, of course, was born here, but his father was Chinese, his mother Scottish. He's an attorney and the author of The Coming Collapse of China. Just yesterday, speaking of the business side of all of this, there was a nomination to be ambassador of China. Not an official nomination. It's more like word of mouth right now. But it's Terry Branstad, who is the governor of Iowa, who is a staunch conservative, who is a friend to the president of China, Xi Jinping. And Gordon, I'm just curious to know what you think about the notion of Terry Branstad being the ambassador to China.
Well, he has known Xi Jinping since 1985. That's 31 years ago. And people are saying, well, because he knows Xi Jinping, then things are going to get better in terms of China-U.S. relations. I don't think that's right. It doesn't really matter whether he's known Xi for 31 years or 31 seconds. Xi Jinping views the United States as his main strategic competitor. And so relations are not going to be good in the years going forward. We just got to recognize that. This is not an issue of friendship because the Chinese are ruthlessly pragmatic. They're not trying to establish cooperative relations with us. They're trying to get what they want, and we should be doing the same thing.
You know, Gordon, it is kind of amazing to see how China has prospered and become, I guess, I think the second largest economy, would we say,
That's
in the
right.
world? Yeah, second strongest. Second only to the United States. And of course, a lot of that is because of, I believe, U.S. business interests and government decisions that have passed on resources to China and patent information. And even I remember the Clintons giving secrets to China illegally during their time in office. There have been a lot of things that have transpired that have built China into this major world power. I just like your comments on that.
Yes. I mean, one can understand that during the Cold War, which was this existential struggle, that we would form a temporary alliance with Beijing, which is what we did. But after the Cold War is over, American policy towards China has been unproductive of not only American interests, but interests for the international system. As you suggest, we have placed Chinese interests ahead of ours. Clinton's policy towards China was bad. The worst policy that we've had towards China was under the administration of George W. Bush, where we let the Chinese have the run of East Asia, where we actually paid a ransom to free our aviators after the Hainan plane incident. This is a low point in American diplomacy. Things got a little better under the present occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania, but they're not nearly sufficient to defend American interests. And so what we have is a problem. We have got a bipartisan problem right now. The American foreign policy establishment is failing the American people because we should be putting, you know, people talk about America first. That's fine. We should be putting the interests of our country first and the interests of the international system. We're only starting to do that as people realize that China does not want to become a member of the international system in good standing, that they're a lawless participant in the international system. that's a bad thing.
That's kind of what President-elect Trump has been hinting at, you know, all during the campaign. Man, did he ever call out China? You know, you wonder who has had his ear on this? Is it just his own business dealings, or how has he become expert on China's dealing with us?
He has a number of foreign policy advisors, and also there are a number of people who supported his campaign who have good views on China, like Alex Gray, Stephen Yates. There's a whole bunch of those folks, Peter Navarro, who have a much more skeptical view on China. I don't agree with everything that those guys say. So, for instance, I think we should be in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But nonetheless, they have a much better view on China, which is typified by the phone call that was arranged between President Tsai and President-elect Trump. This was a very good thing, and we ought to applaud the president-elect for doing that, because U.S.-China policy just hasn't been working. The Chinese have become much more aggressive, much more provocative in recent years. That policy had to change, and all this hand-wringing that we're upsetting the Chinese, well, that's good, because the Chinese need to know that an American leader has the political will to stand up for the international community and to stand up for the United States.
Well, they really are upset. In fact, I started reading a couple of things. There's an outlet, the People's Daily, which is the Communist Party mouthpiece. I know you know this. And the couple of things they're saying, he is trying to pillage other countries for U.S. prosperity. He's trying to smash the current world economic order, of which the U.S. is the biggest beneficiary. He says that Trump will learn in time not to cross China, and that threatening a fierce competition with Beijing if the U.S. increases arms sales to Taiwan, and on it goes. I mean, they're not being bashful about their feelings about President-elect Donald Trump. You know, we've had a dual policy. I know this because while we have been moving heaven and earth to do business with China, and while international global businesses have made money hand over fist, and Americans then have had, you know, cheap products, beautiful products. The Chinese are marvelous craftsmen. But at the same time, the Chinese have been sort of plotting our demise militarily. It really has not made sense, Gordon.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. We've been funding the modernization of the Chinese military, which, as you say, is configuring itself to fight the United States. And Xi Jinping, as I mentioned, views the United States as China's primary strategic adversary, so he's not going to help us. This we have to understand that, as we try to develop these friendly relations with Beijing, it hasn't worked. And by the way, the goal of American foreign policy shouldn't be friendly relations. I mean, why should we want Chinese autocrats to be happy and healthy? What we want them to do is to act responsibly, and we have not imposed the cost on them to push them in the right directions. So, you know, while we complain about the Chinese as villains, because they certainly are villainous, we have to hold ourselves accountable because we have allowed them to become aggressive, to become provocative. So, for instance, President Obama allowed the Chinese to actually seize Scarborough Shoal from the Philippines. This was another low point in American diplomacy. And this is going on and on. So we have to protect ourselves. I hope that President Trump, when he takes over, will have the political will. Because we have many more tools than the Chinese have, but the Chinese have more political will. That's the real problem, that we have not had a leader who is willing to defend the international system since Ronald Reagan.
You know, Gordon, this is a question I've always had, and I've never actually gotten an answer to it. In the history of communism, you know, which is not a long history, really, just goes back, what, to the 30s or 20s, the whole idea has been to sort of overtake and sort of, at least communist dictators have taken land and tried to impose communism on people, and it's like they want to spread communism everywhere. But I have never really... Do you think that that's China's policy? Like, would they really and truly want to occupy the United States? Or how does that, what is it there, what would be their end goal from the hardliners, the hard military, hardliner military folk in China? What would the end game be with the United States?
Well, we don't really know because, you know, as aggressors become successful, they want more and more, they expand their ambitions. China has certain territorial goals, which have expanded. They want a good part of India. They want the South China Sea, the Senkakus from Japan, which they only established. They only made their claim at the end of 1971. Chinese official media is talking about taking Okinawa and the rest of the Ryukyu chain, and there is latent talk in Beijing about getting back, as they say, Vladivostok and a good portion of the rest of Siberia. So Chinese ambitions, their territorial ambitions, are expanding as they become more successful. And this is, you know, I'm not saying that the People's Republic of China is the Third Reich, but it's not. But nonetheless, the dynamic of the 1930s and the dynamic of today is the same. And it will continue. You know, we are the Britain and France of our era. We are letting a hostile power advance. And, you know, the British and the French did not complain about the remilitarization of the Rhineland. They allowed Hitler to absorb Austria, to take Sudetenland, and then the rest of Czechoslovakia. And then, you know, they were pushed too far, and they had to declare war when Hitler invaded Poland on September 1st, 1939. Well, we have a slower-moving dynamic right now with the Chinese taking Mischief Reef, Scarborough Shoal, trying to occupy large portions of the South China Sea. The Chinese ambitions are basically the same, to take territory that is now under the control of others. And we need to stop this before we have an accelerating dynamic that can only lead the world to another global contest.
It really is so complex. There are so many parts to our relationship with China. We only have a couple of minutes left, Gordon, but one thing that impacts people listening to me is China has invested so much money in the United States, whether it's in buildings and land and loans and all of that. How in the world do we extricate ourselves from that? And also then, if China is going to pull itself from the world economy, kind of separate itself, this is an impossible answer in 2 minutes, but can you respond to that?
Well, China is actually selling U.S. Treasury obligations. They've been doing so since the middle of 2014 because they have to keep their currency at an artificially high rate. A lot of Chinese investment into U.S. hard assets is actually flight capital, as the Chinese people and institutions want to get their money out. So these are processes that are occurring because people don't have confidence in their own country. And this is going to be the big story in global economics going forward, flight capital. Last year, perhaps $1 trillion of net capital outflow from China.
Wow, so it's going to be kind of the sea. It's going to be a big sea change, and I would imagine. Would you not imagine American goods are going to have to go up if we're going to have if we're going to start protecting ourselves and protecting American workers? Then Americans are going to have to pay more for their goods and services, don't you think?
Probably that's the case. But remember, we don't have to buy from China. We can buy goods that are just as inexpensive from our friends, and that I think is important for us. You know, we should be buying from Bangladesh. We should be buying from India. We should be buying from Vietnam, largely because we're not then funding the military that is hoping to fight us.
Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, which is a whole other issue for another day. But Gordon, listen, I appreciate your time so much. It's very nice to have this time with you, and hopefully we can talk again. Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to you too, Sandy.
All right. Well, all right, Sandy Rios, it's been a good Thursday, and it's an interesting day, isn't it? And sort of today may bring some more nominations, maybe Secretary of State, who knows. But it is kind of a wild ride, and we're on the thing we're riding all together. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.